Okay, so two major sections to today. Why IFI? So why is this ministry important? And then how do you reach more students with the gospel? So that's basically what we're about. And hopefully this clicker is working. It looked like it is. So let's get started. And it starts with the Great Commission. Has everybody heard of that? Anybody have any thoughts about where the Great Commission is in the Bible? Any thoughts?
Matthew 28,
that's a good one. Is it anywhere else?
Oh yeah.
We'll just run through. Actually, I'm just going to throw up four. There's a bunch of them. But in Genesis 12, you go back to the first book, and Abram, all the families of the earth will be blessed. Mark 16:15, go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. Acts 1:8, we'll be Jesus' witnesses to the ends of the earth. These obviously are not exact quotes, just kind of paraphrase them. And then obviously the Matthew 28, this is the one we refer to the most, go and make disciples of all nations. So these are just some of them, but these are significant passages in Scripture because, you know, in these, at least in those last three, the ones in the New Testament, those are Jesus' final words. Might not have been the final word, but it was the final words that he was saying. So this is important stuff. And when he says to make disciples of all nations in Matthew 28, and he tells his disciples to do that and to teach them everything I taught you, and so that is to be passed down through the generations. And so that's what we're doing. Any questions so far? Interrupt any time. You're fine. Okay, so the Great Commission, Jesus commissioned his disciples to make disciples of all nations. But as far as reaching the nations, more than half of the world's populations and nations are still unreached. That's the negative side. The positive side is half the world is reached with the gospel, which is awesome. So we've made a lot of headway as the body of Christ, but there's still a long way to go. So does anybody want to take a stab at what the 1040 window is? We got a mic here, and you'll be recorded. So this is important info. Anybody know the 1040 window? Any takers? You don't have to. So don't feel like you gotta answer.
It's that area throughout Northern Africa and Asia that has the most unreached people groups yet. I think there are 1,600 distinct people groups yet to be reached, according to Wycliffe. And encountering both the non-religious and those three major world religions.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Yeah, these are the least, either unreached or least reached peoples of the world. So this is there's a long way to go in fulfilling the Great Commission. There's a lot of headway though. Like in China, last I heard, it's 7.5% now. I mean, that's crazy. It's growing. Christianity is growing like crazy in that area, and obviously other areas as well. And then there's other areas that are just really, really hard areas to reach. Okay, so we have the Great Commission. We also have the Great Opportunity. Anybody want to take a stab at what that is? How about that? The nations are here. The nations are here. So that's the Great Opportunity. And we're going to get into that a little bit. So it's international students. So does anybody have an experience? This is where I want you to be able to share during these next few minutes. So if you have met or if you've worked with an international student, if you've done something with an international student, if you know somebody, you might know a bunch of them, I'd like to be able to share some stories because I think it's really great if you can hear from each other. I got a few stories as well, but if you can hear from each other, that would be great. You got one? That would be great. Yeah, go ahead.
My first year at Ohio State, my roommate Well, I was in the International House program, which was like a whole floor devoted to for international students and international studies students. I was in the Arabic program, and my roommate was the first exchange student ever to come to Ohio State from the Sultanate of Brunei, Darussalam, which is a tiny, tiny country on the island of Borneo, but it's completely Muslim except for Chinese, and then they have a tribal population as well. And that was 14 years ago, and we're still good friends, and we visited each other all over the world, and of course, I've shared the gospel with her so many times, and it hasn't changed her yet. But I still pray that it will, and I get to see her again this April, and I can't wait.
Oh, that's cool. That's great. Well, I want to hear more stories like that as we go, and this is what it's all about. And you know what's really cool I've noticed when I talk to people is all the stories are different, and all the stories have different levels. Like some people share, hey, I know five students that have come to Christ, and there's other people who are just like, I met an international, it was so awesome, and we prayed, I prayed with that person, and they were asking me good questions, or you know, whatever that is, and it's just really, really cool to hear about what the different experiences. I appreciate you sharing that. I want to hear more. So about 1.2, it's not exactly 1.2, million of the finest students from all over the world preparing for their future in America today. So those are international students. So that's a lot of students. They're the top students. Over 50% of them are getting degrees in business, engineering, math, computer science. These are the top students from all over the world. They're studying things that they're going to get good jobs in. These are key students. So that's another reason it's a great opportunity. Most of the students that come here are from the 1040 window, from the least reached nations. Now we got some that are from Western countries, but the majority of what we see are from the 1040 window. Now the top three countries: China, India, Saudi Arabia, and those are really some of the least reached areas. Except we know, we just talked about, China is growing a ton right now. So if you have, and that's where are your students from, do you have any students, would you like to share like where you're from? You can just throw out some country names if you have some students that you worked with.
I worked with somebody from Estonia.
Estonia, okay, great. Any others?
Iraq, Iran,
Turkey.
Kazakhstan.
Chinese students. Chinese. Swedish. Nice.
Bangladesh.
Congo. Japan. Congo. Excellent. Yeah, and there's ton. I mean, we have students from all over the world. I know here in Central Ohio, or at least Ohio State, I think more than half of the students are from China or India. I think our Dayton ministry has a lot of Saudi students. So there's students really from all over the world that are in our country. It's really cool. And that's showing you that again. You see, that's North Africa across Middle East, Central Asia to East Asia. Okay. Okay, so 85% of them, of course these numbers could be a little off, 84, 86. About 85% of the students will return to their homeland, and many will take positions of leadership and influence in their culture. So if they're the best students of the world, they're getting a great education, they're going back to their homeland, majority are, and they're going to take positions in leadership in these different areas. So was anybody at the banquet this year, the IFI banquet here in Central Ohio? Okay. Well, I'm going to play a video that we had there at the banquet, and it's really cool. And I'll give a quick overview. In, I think it was in the 80s. I don't know the exact story, but I'm going to tell the best I can. In the 80s, there was a work program where some people from China, a delegation from China, came over to work on a project for agriculture. So they were learning. And so the current president of China was part of that delegation in the 80s. So they went to Iowa, and they stayed with host families. And this was huge in his life. So when he was vice president, he actually came back, and it was this huge deal in Iowa. So the vice president of China came back, and he visited. They had film. We'll show you in a second. But they were basically, he was getting a tour of the house that he stayed in. You know, he saw this is the room he slept in when he was, I guess he was in his 20s or something. So it's really cool to see that. And so there were some clips. Well, he during these clips, he's the vice president, and he's now the president of China.
Well, we think this is the biggest thing that's happened in Iowa in a long, long, long time.
Iowa showed the next leader of China some old-fashioned Midwestern hospitality. The small town of Muscatine on the banks of the Mississippi River led the way by welcoming back an old friend. The vice president, then a young agriculture official, visited the town in 1985, touring local businesses and attending simple barbecues.
There he is, the likely next leader of China, standing in the McLean's kitchen back in 1985. He didn't speak much English, but that didn't matter.
You use a smile and a twinkle and offer a piece of cake, and it's not all that complicated.
Xi, who met with President Obama on Tuesday, wants to see the McLean's again, along with about 17 others he met on his trip 27 years ago.
They seemed to be a very nice group, interested in what they were doing and seeing, and interested in meeting with us, and we with them.
One of the things that I remember was how curious all of the delegation members were. Mr. Xi was very pleasant. He had a very, very nice, charming smile.
Actually, when they set up this committee, we don't have very much money. Part of the goal is to have them in our home so they could see how we live. And, you know, with kids, pets, and everything.
He was so pleased with the warm and friendly welcome he received, and he really considers Iowans his old friend. Personal relationships are really important to the Chinese people. Having this kind of relationship with the next leader of China, I think, is very helpful to the state of Iowa.
In Muscatine, preparations are being made for Xi's arrival. People here are excited, including the McLeans, who say they are honored that the man standing in their kitchen 27 years ago wants to come back.
Just for a little time, spend an hour, hour and a half in a room with, as he says, his old friends. That's significant. That's significant.
Yeah. So there's two things about that. I mean, one is, and the reason we showed it at the banquet, is that hospitality can change the world. You know, when you bring somebody in your home, it's powerful. Now, we don't know a lot about this family. I guess we've tried to find out if they're believers or whatever. But so if we can get internationals into our homes, that's a huge, huge thing. And you see what kind of impact it made. After he became president, the kids that were in the house at the time actually were invited back to China, and they got a tour, they got the treatment, you know, and they got a tour of the country, and they got to visit with the president of China by themselves. It's really an amazing story, and it started with hospitality. The other thing that this shows is that, you know, the future presidents of China and of Turkey and Saudi Arabia and all these other places are here right now, and we have an opportunity to impact them for Christ.
Can I just add to that? We've been working just for about 3.5 years with IFI, but over the course of time, we met a lot of Chinese, and they'd say, come visit us in China. And after about a year of pondering that, we finally did take about a 40-day trip to visit about 25 different families or students. But the thing that struck us the most was some of them that we'd only had very, very brief interaction with or to our home or done other things with, they were so appreciative and expressed that. And just to affirm what you're saying, the little thing, we didn't feel like we had done hardly anything. But when we got over there on their turf and their expressions, both in word and hospitality to us, showed just how appreciative they were of what little we did here. So just to affirm that that really goes a long way.
That's cool. That's really cool. Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Dale. Okay, so let's move on. But that just shows you the power of what's going on here. We have the future leaders here today. Okay, so back to the great opportunity. 1.2 million international students, least reach areas of the world. 85% will return, take positions of leadership, and they already know the language, culture, and have connections. So these are people that are very connected. Their families are connected. They know people. They've lived in their culture. They grew up in their culture. They know the language. So that's a huge part. And the question is, why is this an advantage? Why isn't it? What's the advantage, or what strategically, or whatever you want to call it? What's the advantage to this, that they know the language and culture and have connections?
Well, it's indigenous involvement right off the bat, and so it's really neat. They already know all the people and the language and the culture and so forth, and we want to continue to send our missionaries, of course, but usually it doesn't really start rolling until it's indigenous growth, and so you have that immediately.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Any other thoughts about that? Bill has a...
It would be a lot less expensive to do missions in this way than to train missionaries, send them to a new country, have them find a place to live and support them every year. Not that that's bad, but it's a very good use of funds.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, they're going back on their own dime. They're paying for their trip back, or their parents are.
Yeah, and I just have one more comment too. They've already been prepared by God, by Christ, for communication, and that they already know your language. You can communicate very clearly with them. It's not like you had to learn their language and go through the difficulty of trying to be fluent and being able to communicate really well. So
that's good. That's good. That's great. So you touched on this. How does this compare to sending Americans to their countries? And obviously, like Bruce said, we want to still be sending missionaries, but we need to consider international student ministry because of some of the things that were shared. That it really is. I mean, just the time it takes to get ramped up and ready, learning the language, learning the culture, gaining the trust, all that kind of stuff.
You will never, almost never will you be a genuine insider, even if you become fluent in the language, and you're going to be coming home on furloughs, and you're going to probably come home to retire, and this has got such longevity, and they really are a product of their culture. We went as missionaries too, but it doesn't matter. You'll never be a national.
That's great. Good. We have one more.
I've been a pastor 45 years, and sociologists say in the American culture it takes 7 years for a pastor of a church to gain the trust of his congregation. Now, that's not cross-cultural. So just imagine, they have the connections that God has prepared with family and friends automatically.
Oh, that's good. Good thoughts. Well, let's keep moving. But this is really important stuff as we move on. Okay, so a little more about the great opportunity. Many international students are coming to Christ in America. Does anybody want to share a story? If you don't, that's all right. Well, we got stories. But if you got a story, we'd love to hear it. Bill.
When my wife and I were married, and this is almost 30 years ago now, our first international student that we hosted was from Taiwan, And we met with her several times and got to know her. She had quite a long Chinese name that was hard to pronounce. But at the time, I was working as a landscape architect. And so during the day on my job, I had a company truck, and I drove around to my appointments and usually listened to the same radio station. But that day, I turned the radio station to just a little town that had a station that I never listened to. But for some reason, I turned to that station and I left it on. And they had a local news report that there'd been a very bad accident on the interstate right by that town, and the two Chinese students were in critical condition. And they gave the names of the students, and her name rang a bell. And I thought, is that our friend? And I was concerned enough that I called the hospital, and sure enough, it was our friend, and she was just hanging on to life. So we called the our small group leaders from our church and went over to the hospital, and miraculously, they let us in to pray for her. We prayed for her, and then one by one, the doctors were able to address the critical needs that she had and stabilize her, and she lived and recovered to about 95% before she went to Taiwan, returned to her country. And so we made a very good impression in her life of God's ability and his presence in her life, and also with her family members that came during her time of recovery.
Wow. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. That's hard. Is there any other stories? Any students?
I think if you've had interaction with international students, I personally believe that, you know, even if they haven't accepted Christ while you're with them, that you shared your faith so much with them. It's just when they go back to their country, where they often have a place of power or control, it makes a huge influence on how Christianity is accepted around them and in their community. So not only that, but it's the effect that they have on them and that they bring them back. Also, you're planting a seed. You know, they may not accept Christ at the moment that they're with you, but you know the Lord is working on them. Like Rich mentioned in his lecture introductory, the Lord is working on them before they come to you, and he's working on them after they come to you too.
That's great. That's great. We got another story. Another comment.
When we were here, when we were here the very first time, when we were with IFI, that was in the 90s, we picked up several students from the airport as being part of the IFI team. And we got to pick up this lady. She was from Kenya with her 7-year-old son. She's a single mother, and she's coming to do her PhD. And just befriended her. She was not a Christian and did a lot of things with her. Many years after we had gone back to Kenya, we were going to meet our daughter at the airport. We met her at the airport also. And she held me, and she was crying. And she said her son had passed away, had been killed in a road accident here in the US, and she was bringing the body to Kenya. We continued to minister to her because we had been ministering to her throughout over here. And when we were ministering, when we were doing befriending her, she was not a Christian. We just did what IFI does. And we got to be involved in the son's burial at home, and that ministered to her and what we had done with her before. When we came back to join the IFI staff, Samson called her and said, oh, we are here to join the IFI. She says, count me in. I'm going to be supporting you.
Oh.
And she said, you changed my life when just by welcoming me to your home, having me around you. And so we looked at it and thought, what an opportunity. And then now she's gone into retirement, but she had invested at home in Kenya. She sold that investment and started a church in Kenya.
Wow.
So that for us is quite
wow.
a testimony.
That's awesome. Oh, great stories. Well, let's move on here. Okay, has anybody experienced this or heard stories? We just talked about that. IFI Columbus, don't have stats from all the areas, but I know here in Columbus we're reaching about, in the last few years, reaching about 1,200 of the new students that come here. And when I say reaching, that means having a contact with them. It could be as significant as somebody coming into somebody's home, you know, a student coming to their home for a few nights, picking them up at the airport, you know, having conversations, keeping in touch with them. It could be that significant. Or it could be as small as, you know, coming to an IFI party. But they basically, it's students that have met Christians. And that's the idea here. So about 1,200 new students have experienced the love of Christ in some way through volunteers. And that's, I think they're, I don't know the exact number now, but it's probably not much more than 1,800 new students that come in. So this is there's a lot of students being touched by the ministry. It's pretty cool. Now we've tried to put some numbers together, but it looks like about averaging about 6.5% of those 1,200 are coming to Christ each year, and so that's pretty significant, and that's an important number to know, because we want the students to come to Christ, we want the students to bring the gospel back to their homeland, and we're seeing that the more we reach, the more that actually come to Christ, because they're hearing the gospel and God's working in their lives. So many international students are coming to Christ. Many are being trained and discipled in their new faith. We have about 500 in Bible studies. I think that's throughout IFI. So a lot of them are coming to Christ in the Bible studies. A lot of them are growing in their faith and taking leadership roles. I think that might be throughout the ministry. Many are being discipled. I know there's at least a few hundred in Columbus. Many are being discipled with volunteers, staff, and churches. Our churches are taking part in their development. I know Xenos, there's groups that are working with international students. They have in their small groups. So a lot of these Chinese students will go back and they'll be used to that kind of home church environment. Some will return home equipped to share the gospel with their countrymen. That's what we want to do. Is, you know, I think when a lot of us, we all have our different journeys, but usually we grew up with Christmas and we grew up with Easter and we know the stories. And I mean, I came to Christ in college, but I went to a church and I knew stuff. A lot of the students that we're meeting are starting from scratch. And so they really do need time to develop, and it can take a while to grow in Christ. And so equipping them is really important, because they're going to go back to their homeland, and if their plan is to share Christ with their friends and family, it's going to be a challenge. They're going to be, in some ways, on their own. But obviously, they're not on their own. They have the Holy Spirit. God is with them, and we're trying to connect them with other people in their country. But we also have the iSEED program, which is our, you might have heard about it already, but that's our training program. We take students each year. I think we have 8 or 9 this year that we're training, and they're getting intense discipleship, and it's a great, great program. And a lot of them are really growing and bringing Christ back to their homeland. It's really an amazing program.
How many years has it been going?
Officially... Probably working on about 8 years now, but it's always been in the DNA. So we've always had students that have stayed. They could stay with their visa if they're working in their field. They could stay for another year, and so that's really a good opportunity for them. So we try to find part-time jobs for them. They just have to work, I think, 15 or 20 hours a week, and then the rest of the time can be discipleship. They might work more, but it gives them another year to stay here. So it gives them the time and it gives them the training. Okay, and so all this is happening. And I think, I guess We do want to watch time, but if there's anybody who has a story about a student, maybe another story about a student that has gone back, we have stories here, so you don't have to share. But if anybody has a story about anybody who's gone back, maybe brought the gospel back with them.
Rich Mendola had an international house.
Get the mic.
Rich Mendola had an international house at University of Buffalo when he was with ISI, and I was a pastor in the area working with him. I took over the international house when he came to Athens, Ohio, and one of the six students there was Mustafa from Congo. And Mustafa was really a pretty hard case. He had a lot of questions, was very skeptical. But when he came to Christ, he was on fire, and he is... Rich just told me yesterday he's kept contact with him since 1985, and Mustafa has planted many, many churches in Congo.
Wow.
And a great leader of the Lord.
That's amazing. I mean, you got one person, and then what does multiple churches do? You know, I mean, that's amazing. I want to again, at the banquet we shared Lily's story. And she went back to China, and the story's on there. It tells itself. But this is a really another great example of what God's done, and this is through Central Ohio. Actually, this video is not. There's an extra video on there. I apologize. Real quick, the tickets. Did anybody see these tickets this year? Yeah, Mark did. We have these tickets over there if you want to see it, but. We had this project going at the end of last year where each person that went and saw a video on YouTube, you know, you get the view on there so you know how many views it gets. And so we had some generous donors give some money toward this project. And so each view that people saw it, IFI got a dollar from those donors. So it was really cool. And so it served as an incentive for people to pass these out and introduce their friends to IFI. And it didn't go as big as we were hoping, but we got about 1,700 views on there. So that was 1,700 people that got to hear the story. And Lily's story was on there. So I'm gonna show that video on here, and then we can talk more about the ticket thing later if you're interested in hearing more about it, because we're gonna keep that going.
Yep.
Oh, Mark.
That's still in effect, right?
It was not in effect, but now it's back in effect.
Okay.
So yeah.
Yeah, okay. I think I got that originally through an email, and I was able to share it on my Facebook too. Which
oh, good.
I did.
Good.
So, and you could click on it on my Facebook sharing. So, if you see that show up where you can share it and you're on Facebook, that's a good thing to do.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool tool. To be able to introduce people to IFI. And the story's great, which I'm going to show you that real quick. It's just a 2-minute story.
Dear brothers and sisters in the U.S., I saw a gentleman with two beautiful girls on his side, and they were holding a ball with my name on it. And then the next thing happened, they took me to their home for a whole week. But that kind of love, this kind of unconditional love I saw from my host family, kind of caused the curiosity about God in me. Thank you.
So the you know, what if, what, her name's Lily. We did Lindy just because it was on the public, it was on YouTube. But you know, what if they didn't share, somebody didn't share Christ with her? What if somebody didn't offer hospitality? It's really amazing, and then the impact that God's making through her. Okay, the great problem. And we're going to run through these a little quicker, just so we'll have time to finish up. But what do you think the great problem is? I'll just go ahead and answer that. We're not reaching enough of these students. 75% of the international students will never enter, that says enter an American home. So 75% of the students will never go into an American home. That's 900,000 students with the statistics we have there. So that's a lot of students that are not getting the opportunity to share a meal in an American home or visit an American home or whatever. And so maybe just show of hands, has anybody had an international in your home before? Cool, yeah, most everybody, good. Yeah, and it's an amazing experience. I mean, they bring gifts. They like to bring a part of the meal. They like to bring food for you to try. I mean, they're just so excited to be in the home. They love our homes. It's really amazing. So it's such an easy way to serve them, and in such a significant way. Okay, so 80% of the international students will never enter, I spelled it right there, an American church while in the United States. So they like to check out our culture, they like to see what we do, and so they're willing to go to our churches, and we just need to invite them. And many campuses across the country have limited or no one reaching out to international students with the gospel. And so there's a huge, huge opportunity out there of college campuses. Even, and there's a lot that just have maybe one or two staff that are trying to reach an entire campus or entire campus area, and it's just not able to do that. And so it's really part of the problem. So the solution: mobilize the local church. That's key, and there's a reason that's the first thing on there. Churches are the foundations of international student ministry. That's really what it's all about, the church involved in reaching the nations. And it's in their DNA. I mean, we look at a lot of our churches, and the mission statements are to reach the nations, to reach people, to reach people with the gospel. And they want to do that, so we need to involve them. And not just one church, but as many churches as possible. IFI started through one church in 79, but quickly realized they needed to partner with multiple churches. One church is not going to reach all these students. So we need to mobilize the church. We need to mobilize more workers for the field, staff, and volunteers. So that's significant. So we need more staff to be able to lead different ministries. Volunteers can lead, but it's a little harder because a lot of times they have a day job or whatever. So we need more staff, and we need more volunteers on the field. Obviously, through the local church, that's where volunteers come from. We need more resources, training, and materials. I don't know if you'll hear more about this, but we're putting together a startup kit that is going to be really important to the growth of the ministry. So as IFI is growing and getting on more campuses, we have this startup kit that will help them get going. There's videos, there's resources, all kind of things. And it's going to be really important to to reaching more campuses, because we really want to reach as many as God has called us to reach. And then the fourth thing is generosity. So the solution: mobilize the church, more workers on the field, more resources, materials, and generosity. And this leads us into the second part. I'm gonna go through some of these a little quicker, and so we can get to the end. And obviously, we'll have time for questions. But if you have questions as we go, let's do that. So reaching the nations through generosity. And I do have a passage I want to look at. So Philippians 4, and I'll just read that real quick. So this is Philippians 4. This is Paul talking to the church there. Yet it was kind of you to share my trouble. And you Philippians yourselves know that in the beginning of the gospel, when I left Macedonia, no church entered into partnership with me in giving and receiving, except you only. Even in Thessalonica, you sent me help for my needs once and again. Not that I seek the gift, but I seek the fruit that increases to your credit. I have received full payment and more. I am well supplied, having received from Epaphroditus the gifts you sent, a fragrant offering, a sacrifice acceptable and pleasing to God. And my God will supply every need of yours according to his riches and glory in Christ Jesus. That's Philippians 4. I know it's kind of a big passage, but we're just gonna look at that real quick. Giving is for the giver's benefit. You saw there that Paul said, "I seek the fruit that increases to your credit." So, you know, I'm in full-time fundraising, but my job is not to try to get a bunch of money from people. My job is to help people grow in Christ as they're involved in this ministry, and so it's not a transaction. Hey, you need to give money to IFI so we could do this, but it's also about the giver. And I have a story I want to share with you in a second that really illustrates what this is about. But Paul said, "I seek the fruit that increases to your credit." So how does this benefit the giver's heart? So we learn to trust God, seek first His kingdom, the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. So He'll take care of us if we seek Him, we trust Him. Learn to love God more. No one could serve two masters. He will hate the one and love the other. He'll be devoted to one, despise the other. So we can learn to love God more. Learn how to serve God more. In that same passage, you cannot serve God and money. So we have to choose. And so when we're giving, we're choosing God. Learn to sacrifice like God. When we give, what an illustration, the most important sacrifice ever, where God gave His only Son for us. And so when we give, are we remembering, as we're sacrificing, are we remembering that? So this is that story I wanted to share. I've been talking to a donor. He's a blue collar guy. He doesn't have a ton of money, but he's a single guy, and he just loves to give, and he's so generous, and he gives like he has a lot of money. It's pretty amazing. It's really amazing to watch it. It's really inspiring. Every time we get together, I'm really inspired by him. So the other day we were talking, and he was telling me again, he's already told me this several times, he's like, "My giving last year really hurt. It was painful." And he's telling me that, you know, he's just being real with me, you know, because he tells me, he says, "I want to give to IFI, I want to give more each year to IFI." Like, that's his goal. So he's like, "What did I give last year?" You know, and he wants to break that. I think he broke this year, I think he broke it by, or 2016 broke his record by like $10, you know. But he wanted to get there. But it's a significant amount of money. So it's really cool to see his heart for giving, and he just can't help it. Well, he had other opportunities to give to some other places, and he gave too much. Actually, when we were talking, he said, "Yeah, I gave to this place and this place. Just tell me about it." And I was like, "Uh-oh, he's going to give less this year," you know. And he's like, "I still want to break my record," you know. I was like, "Man, this is great," you know. So it's really cool to see his heart. But when we were together 2 days ago, we prayed, and one of the things because it's difficult, one of the things he said, he goes, "I'm getting my bonus," or they're announcing our bonus this month. And he said, yeah. I said, so do you expect? He goes, I don't know what to expect. I said, have you ever gotten zero? And he goes, yeah, we've got, that's happened. And anyway, I got an email from him yesterday. We prayed about it and all that. Got an email from him yesterday. He said, I got the biggest, I haven't even replied to him yet. I haven't had time to reply to him yet. He goes, I got the biggest bonus check I've ever gotten. And it just shows, I mean, his world was rocked by God. God rocked his world. But he gave sacrificially. And so, you know, he really gets it. It's really cool. I don't get it like that. You know, that's cool for me to be around. Okay, so learn to sacrifice like God. Learn to be content in God. Paul said, I have learned in whatever situation I am and to be content. Your heart will change. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. You know, our heart goes where our money goes. Bruce. Get the mic. You got it.
This last particular verse, where your treasure is, there where your, that's where your heart is. And I was trying to find this because I recently was reminded, let me step back real quick. This isn't so much giving IFI, this is more our immigrants, refugees, and as far as like trying to find people who maybe have an interest in that and giving to that. But the same thing's true of IFI. You know, how many people really are, you know, understand the needs and of international students or immigrants, refugees, you know, and give. And so I'm looking for those people who have a heart for that, all right? Because if they have a heart for that, maybe the money will follow. This turned it completely upside down. And the point that this person was making to me, and I could send you this email, but they were saying, if somebody believes in you, me, whatever, you, even if they don't know their cause, even if they're not Christian, or you know, they will give to the cause, it will change their heart. Where their treasure goes, their heart goes. And it really flipped this upside down for me. I thought it was really cool, because a lot of times we feel like we need to limit our asking to the people who are, you know, committed Christians, really get missions and all that kind of stuff. Anyway.
That's awesome. That's really cool. That's really cool. So it's the power of sacrifice and giving and letting go and loving God more, and that's a great illustration. So it's about knowing God better. So really, our giving helps us know God better. Giving is for the giver's benefit. Giving pleases God. So we saw in that Philippians verse that we just read there. Gifts, their donations were a fragrant offering, a sacrifice acceptable and pleasing to God. And so that's really cool. I mean, when we give, God is smiling. That's pretty cool. Giving supplies ministry. So in Philippians 4:18 again, he said, "I am well supplied." And what was Paul doing? He was reaching the nations with the gospel, and his ministry was supplied through the giving. Okay, so generosity drives ministry. I'm just going to give a real quick thing here. Pelotonia. Have anybody heard of Pelotonia? That bike race or bike ride? They raise, I don't know, $10 million a year in Central Ohio. It's pretty amazing. But when you get the backstory, it's not quite as amazing. They were giving a grant for 5 years for $12.5 million. $2.5 million. I'm being recorded, so hopefully my figures are right. They're close if they're not right. So $2.5 million. This is what I remember: $2.5 million a year to come here and do the Pelotonia thing. So they got this out of Boston or somewhere. So they got this money here, and they opened an office. They hired staff. They had this huge marketing budget, and they started going to Nationwide and Cardinal Health and all these different organizations, and trying to find a point person, a leader, and they're buying food for people and getting people to gather together so that they get them to ride this race. So they would raise money for the work of raising money for cancer. Obviously, with cancer, it's a little easier in the sense of everybody can relate to cancer, and so it's harder for IFI to go to Nationwide. But the point is that it took funding. It took a lot of funding, and all that came in. So $10 million a year, $2.5 million, sounds like maybe a good investment, I don't know. But that's how they raise a lot of money. Now, obviously, with IFI, we're on a much smaller type budget, but I think it's a great example.
You've got about $8 million to work with.
Only about $8 million, yeah. So it's a little less, only two a year. That would definitely help. We need to talk about that. Okay, so IFI staff, I mean, for staff to get on the field, they raise personal support, and they can get on the field. And once they're on the field, they're able to raise, to just like Paul, you know, he was able to do his work. And also our staff that are in the office that are making things happen. So it really drives ministry. So what could IFI do with $300,000 a year? That's really our gap. We have a gap of about $300,000 in our operating, and if we can hit that gap, we will be able to do a lot of the things that we have not been able to do as far as supporting, not only doing what we're doing here in Central Ohio and having our headquarters here, but also everybody that's on the field is going to be well equipped, well trained, and they'll get up to speed quicker with their support, and so. We need to get to that point. If we're going to go back to the earlier slides, if we're going to reach all those students, if we can raise, it's not a lot of money in the whole scheme of things, especially if you look at Pelotonia, but $300,000 can make a huge impact across this country with international student ministry. And so that's what we're trying to get to. So we get more locations. IFI is on 26 campuses, 16 cities, 7 states. Those numbers seem to change here and there, but that's about where it's at right now. And some of those are starting up, and some of them are very well established. There's some more numbers. We're not going to get into too many details. Basically, there's 4,000 colleges, 17 million students. And international students are 7% of the students, which is kind of amazing. So we have a long way to go to reaching. So with 300,000, we could get more locations, more staff, more churches mobilized. And that's key. I mean, mobilizing the local church. A lot of times you need staff to go there to have time to mobilize the church, and more volunteers, more training. So that's what we can do. So what could IFI do with $1 million a year? That's just a question to think about. So ways to get involved in generosity of IFI. And this is the practical part of what we're doing. And I really wanted to do all that stuff beforehand so you could kind of see where this is all going, is that the importance of what we're doing with international student ministry, with international students reaching the nations with the gospel, it's vital. But we're really... To get past that gap that we have, we really want to get more people involved in the fundraising process. Yeah, Brenda. For raising the funds, I'll quickly answer that. We can talk more about that. We're gonna talk about it. But I'm the sole development guy for IFI. Now we have staff that raise support for their personal ministry, so I'm not the only one doing fundraising, but I'm the sole fundraiser for IFI. So we're limited there. I don't have an assistant or anything like that. And I don't think the answer necessarily is, hey, hire another development staff person, at this point at least. But I think the main thing is, Bruce hit on it earlier actually, is that just the awareness of the opportunities. You know, we make the opportunities to meet students very evident, very obvious, you know, throughout our churches. But the giving opportunities, I don't think we do as good of a job of getting that out there. And so we need to do a better job about that. But the other thing is other people getting involved in the fundraising process. And a great example is our banquet. We're gonna talk about that for a second. But our banquet's coming up in April, And if somebody hosts a table at the banquet, invites some friends there, they'll be given an opportunity to give to IFI. So that's a somewhat easy way to involve people in giving. But that's really, it's just a, as far as manpower, that's probably the main thing, is my limitations as a staff person, and then how do we get other people involved? And so how do I delegate better? And that's really what this is going to be about here. So ways to get involved, and I'm just going to run through this real quick. Give. That's how we can get involved in generosity and invite others to give. So give, invite others to get involved, and others to give. And so that's really what, that's really the bottom line, how we do this. Volunteer and fundraising, I threw that on there because we always need people that help with different mailings and different things like that. And we also have a development team. Bruce helps with that. And if anybody ever wants to join that or have time to meet and think through ways to get the word out about giving, that would be a great way. But we're not going to dwell on that right now. So give and invite others to give. One-time gifts, monthly gifts, and this just to show you something here, where I'm limited. Let's say 100 people start giving an average of $75 a month. That'd be $90,000 a year. So that's pretty significant amount getting into that $300,000. But how do we talk to 100 people to start giving $75 a month, you know, on average? So that's one of the tricks. But the monthly giving can really add up if more people get involved in giving monthly. Then annual commitments, and this is something we're going to start pushing more, is if people want to give, make 3 to 5 year commitments. So if 100 people commit to give it $1,000 a year, that'd be $100,000 the first year. Well, the second year they're still giving, and we get 100 more people. Now we're at $200,000 a year. Third year we're at $300,000 a year. We've reached that, and so that's really just those commitments and people committed to giving on a monthly or annual basis is really a huge way to reach some of these goals. And then one other thing is, and I talk to people about this sometimes, make IFI one of your top three giving recipients. So you probably give to your church and maybe another organization, but would people consider making IFI one of the top three? Like, hey, I'm going to commit to making IFI one of the top places I give to. So that's kind of a personal incentive for some people. And then invite others to give. So who can you invite, and how can you invite them? So you can come up with a bunch of names, and we're not going to have a lot of time for this, but maybe think through some people that might be interested in getting involved. How about small groups, churches, businesses? We have sponsors that we do for the banquet, so can you think of businesses? And then you prioritize your list, and you plan on how to invite them. And this is where we have ways that you can easily, what makes sense for you to get people involved. So we got the IFI banquet. You can invite people. So you have your people. Hey, these are the people I want to introduce to the ministry. And really, when we're talking to people, it's not just about giving, or it's not just about volunteering. We usually say, hey, would you like to pray, serve, and give? And so we try to keep all those things out there. So the banquet is really focused on all those things. So the IFI banquet, a great way to hear the story. You saw those videos. There's more videos, and it's really inspirational. And that's coming up on April 22nd. I got save the date cards. I think they might be in your packets, in our packets. So it's April 22nd. If you want to be a table host, that would be great. Let me know. We could sign up. My IFI event, it's like a house party inviting people into your home. So it's more of an intimate environment, inviting people to your home to have a dessert or a dinner or something like that. And we call it a MyIFI event. I have a toolkit for that. So if anybody's interested in promoting IFI in that way, we've got some tools to make that. So at the end, you can come see the stuff I'm going to be talking about here. And this is an overview. This is really, let's have more conversation. So if you're interested in doing any of this stuff, we could talk more. my IFI webpage, so you can actually set up your own webpage and try to raise money for IFI. Maybe you run 10Ks or marathons or half marathons, or you walk things. You could raise money that way. So that's another tool that you could use. Walk with the Nations. This is something we haven't started yet, but it's a concept, and I really want to see us try to get this going for the summer. But this is the idea where you take an international student and you walk together. See, maybe you commit to walking once a week or something like that, and you walk together. Just simple as that. We're going to walk and we're going to talk. We're going to get to know each other, but you also have a goal together. Hey, we're going to try to raise $1,000 for IFI or whatever, and so if we let the students know about it, they might grab their American friend and say, hey, let's walk together. Let's try to raise money or whatever, or some of our volunteers might want to do the same thing. So I think it's a great way to mix the ministry and fundraising. Coffee, lunch, breakfast, you know, invite people to meet with you and hear about the ministry. Bring them to a student event. We have the Lunar New Year party coming up. And I think we have a rundown of what's coming up up there, but I think it's in our packets as well. But bring somebody to a student event so they could see the ministry. Connect them with an IFI staff person. So if you don't want to talk to them about fundraising or anything like that, just say, hey, I want you to meet a friend, you know, and we'd love to talk to people. Sponsorship for the banquet. Does your doctor, does your dentist, does your insurance guy, whatever, is he a believer? Would he be excited about IFI? Would he want to sponsor like the banquet? Change the world. That was something we did this year. Where we had these change bottles, change the world, get it? So people could put change in there at this church. And we raised over $5,000 at this one church, so it was really cool. And it raised a ton of awareness. So as you're brainstorming, you know, like your church, hey, how can I get my church involved? That might be a good way to do that. And again, you can come check these things out. Giving Through Living, if you shop at Kroger, that could benefit IFI. If you shop on Amazon, those are some of the ways, some of the tools that you can use to get involved. So I have these involvement. We have 5 minutes. I think we're supposed to do an evaluation too, right?
Yeah.
Like before the end of the time.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to leave you with these. I want, if everybody can at least just grab, make sure, just come check out these things, but everybody grab one of these and just look at it. You don't have to, you can utilize it however you want. But if you're interested in talking more about how to get involved, this is an involvement worksheet. So it's kind of a way for you to say, hey, this is how I'd like to get involved this year or whatever, and this is how I'd like to get other people involved. So it gives you a name, like how you want to get involved through praying, serving, and giving, a name name storm of a list of people, and then ways that you can get people involved. So recommend taking a look at that. If you raise personal support, that could be a good tool for your supporters, because they can throw house parties for you, different things like that. So. So this is really, I mean, all that stuff is to say that we have all these tools, and we have a great and incredible opportunity to reach the nations with the gospel. And you know, I'd love for more people to be involved in the fundraising efforts here at IFI, and it's really exciting. So the last screen says you can reach the nations through generosity. So really, that's a key. If we can get to that 300,000, start there. How do we do that? And more people need to get involved. And so I encourage you to check this stuff out, and we can talk afterwards. And if you want to talk later, we can have a meeting or something and talk more about it. And I think that's it. We just have the evaluations, right? Sure.
Jason, I was wondering. I know I worked for an organization, the Navigators, in Kenya.
Uh-huh.
The staff were really struggling in raising support. But we ended up changing some few things. And the staff support went up almost 100-fold, the Navigators Kenya. And that was what the CEO and the fund, we got somebody on, a director to help with the fundraising. And what they did, they were available to meet any group of persons whom the staff had to raise funds, you know. Because sometimes it's easier when you hear from the CEO telling you, this is what we do, and this person is important. Can you think about partnering with them? As opposed to the person talking to people by themselves. The staff members brought people together, groups of people together, mm-hmm. and the CEO and the person and the director also was involved in the fundraising, was able to go there and just speak to them. And that way, people's funds kept going up because not all staff members are good at fundraising. Mm-hmm. Not all of us have got that that talent. But when somebody else in the organization talks for you on your behalf, mm. you just bring the people around, the word seems to, I don't know, it seems to make a big difference mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. than when you talk just for yourself. Mm. We saw that happening in the Navigators Kenya.
That's really good. That's good. And that, and really, you know, we told a lot of stories as we went through this time, because really that's going to be the most powerful thing is your story, you know, as you're telling your story, you know, hearing, I mean, all these different stories is really, really powerful to the message. And obviously in that situation, they probably had a lot of good stories to share. Hey, and guys, I really appreciate you coming to this session. This is really cool, and let's talk more if you want.